Okay. Come in. Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come, and you shall know peace and joy. Good morning. I'm Elke Lawrence, a member of this fellowship and this morning's convener. Welcome to our members, friends, and guests. The Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan is a community of people who celebrate multiple religious traditions. We believe that faith is ultimately to be experienced in how we live. We have no creed or dogma, but we do invite one another to reflect on how our lives hold up when looked through the eyes of our principles and values that you find on the back of your order of service. If we have any guests and they would like to introduce themselves, now is the time to do so. Announcements are in the inside of your program. I don't have any additional announcements other than to invite you to stay for coffee after the program. Chris, we are now lighting the chalice. We light this chalice as a beacon of hope, a sign of our quest for truth and meaning, and in celebration of the life we share together. Thank you. Our opening hymn is number 360, Here We Are Gathered. Please stand as you're able to. It is now time to share our joys and sorrows. By sharing our joys, they are multiplied. By sharing our sorrows, they are lightened. Please wait for the microphone.
Good morning. I'm Kristen Corwin, and I just got back yesterday from a meeting of the National Society of Black Physicists. When I told my friend I was going, she said, "What are you doing there?" I said, "I'm going to recruit undergraduates for our undergraduate research program." And I've gone to this meeting once 4 years before, and I kind of felt like an outsider. I was an exhibitor, not a participant, and I went to some of the functions, but I kind of felt like I was an extra. And 4 years later, I went back. The meeting didn't happen for 4 years, largely because it wasn't financially viable. And I found out that over many years, this meeting had been run by faculty who believed so strongly in helping students, especially at historically black colleges and universities, that they had bailed it out financially from their own pockets. And then it went through restructuring, and then it was back. And I went this time, and I felt like I really did belong there. I discovered that after a day or so, I would see a group of African Americans talking with badge lanyards like mine, and I'd say, that's my tribe, that's where I belong. And that was a very powerful experience for me. And I credit a lot of it to some of the things I've learned here over many years about inclusive thinking and helping people and just treating them as equals. So thank you.
My name is Edith Hinrichs, and it is good to be here and greeted by so many friends. And I still dream of the day when I will be here permanently. This time it's for 2 weeks, because my great-grandson just celebrated his fourth birthday yesterday. Had to be up here for that. And the other thing is here.
This is a concern. I have just been kind of just really emotional hearing about our gun laws in Kansas that are changing, and I just want to do something. So if anyone knows of groups that I could, you know, join or something to change this, I would like to know about it. Thank you.
Yesterday, Dad and I went sledding here, and we used a toboggan. And we went all the way down the hill, then on the flat surface, then we ended up on the side of the street.
Good morning, Sue Prey. I just wanted to say thanks to whoever shoveled the sidewalks. Thank you.
I'm Lily Colburn, Sandy's daughter, and it's her birthday today.
Yesterday, last time, we came here to sled.
Are we going to sled today?
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, we had one of our traditional February 27th birthday parties with Dick Beeman, and although it was 28th, but, you know, and Kathleen Tenona and Harriet Yonke and myself, and it's getting to be really a wonderful, like, family tradition. We just had a great time.
Did people hear that? Could you hear it? Four people here have the same birthday. Yesterday, they celebrated Harriet. Oh, the 27th. Harriet, Pat, Dick Beeman, and Kathleen Tenona. So, got to belt it out. Okay.
Thank you all for sharing all these joys today. It's now time for the children's story. Sandy Nelson, our director of religious education, wants the children to come up.
You want a chair? Yeah, that'd be cool. Oh, I'm so glad. That's so
good. missing Arthur. I was going to thank Arthur. Last time we postponed. Thanks, Matt. La 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 la. La 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 la. A creeper? So it's a Minecraft. Who here knows what Minecraft is? Raise your hand. Wait. Good morning, Arthur. Hi, Colton. You know what? I need to raise my hand. Jake taught me about Minecraft a couple weeks ago. So, well, I'm so glad. The last time the adults talked, I think it was the last time, the adults talked about personal journeys. Arthur taught me about Pokemon and how Pokemon do journeys, sort of. Pokemon, excuse me. Okay, so I didn't learn everything. Pokemon, okay, well, like I said, I didn't learn everything, but I learned a little bit, and so I wanted to say thank you to Arthur for teaching me new things, because I like learning new things. Four new songs? And last time, you probably also remember that everything I learned totally got me off track, so I'm going to try to focus this time. Oh, I'm writing on myself, my pen. Thank you. Has anybody... Okay, so we know some people know about Pokemon. Pokemon? Oh, okay. Pokemon. Tomato, tomato. Okay, so how many people here know what a library is? Man, there's not very many adults that know what a library is. Look at that. None of them raised their hands. Okay, we'll try again. Now this time, how many people here have lots of books. They have lots of other things too. How many people here have been to the library this year, like since January 1st? That's impressive. That's impressive. Oh, I need to raise my hand too. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's cool. So there are things at the library. Where is this going, right? A personal journey. Sometimes you know stuff you've learned from your parents or from your siblings or peers, and you kind of are maybe on a track or a path or a journey to get somewhere. But maybe you decide that there's another place that you want to go and you don't know anything about it. Where would you go? I'm not tracking. Okay. We're not going to talk about Pokemon for a little while, okay? So when I was a kid, I would go to the library to find out stuff. Nowadays, I suppose you go to Google. That's where I go. Okay. However, the library is the key to this. Okay, so believe it or not, I am reading a story. And I know how to pronounce the title. The title is The Knight and the Dragon. But I might need a librarian or another adult or a child to help me pronounce the person's name who wrote the book. Tommy DiPaolo? Okay. I was right. Good. So The Knight and the Dragon. And what do you see here?
It's a castle on a tree.
Castle. And over here? A cave. Anybody read this story before? Okay, well. Did you get it from the library?
No.
Oh, well, that's cool. I got mine from the library because I don't hardly buy books anymore. I get all my books from the library. Once upon a time, there was a knight in a castle who had never fought a dragon. And in a cave, not too far away, was a dragon who had never fought a knight. One day, the knight went to the castle library and took out all the books he could find on dragon fighting. Meanwhile, back at the cave, the dragon had rummaged through all the things from his ancestors and found books on knight fighting. Because, generally, you'd think that a knight and a dragon would fight each other. The knight began to build some armor. So he or she, this person, okay, for the purposes of reading, we'll assume this person is a he, him or him, okay. And he's what is he doing? He's reading a book about how to build armor, and he pours the hot metal and does stuff, and presto changeo, it turned into armor. Did he know how to do that already?
No.
He got a book from the library. The dragon, wouldn't that be right if there really was a book like that? I bet there is. The dragon practiced swishing his tail. Can you guys swish your tail? You don't have to. Oh, you don't have. Okay, butts. Butts work too. Meanwhile, back at the castle, what is the knight doing? He made armor and now sharpening his sword and checking his crossbow, is that what that's called? And his lance. Yeah, that's right. That's a lance where you, I guess you knock people off the horse. And a wicked looking spiky ball. Ooh, these are giving me the chills. And, oh yeah, he's painting a shield. And he's got it all hung up. And does he look like he's ready now? Okay, so he's ready for this journey of his that he's knows is his to do. Meanwhile, back at the cave, what is the dragon doing? He's practicing all his scary faces, isn't he? Anybody want to practice a scary face? Ooh! Ah! Good. I bet he's vocalizing, too. Good job. Okay, now up here we got the dragon. Pretend, or the knight. What is the knight trying to do? Oops. Yeah, he's trying to fight the dragon with the lance, but he ended up in the tree. And the dragon is practicing, and the dragon didn't quite do very well either. So maybe this... Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, so, but then they practiced and practiced, and the knight got better, and he was able to actually crash his sample, and the dragon got better, and he was actually able to use his fire. And they seemed to be pretty proud of themselves, because they knew what they had to do, and they learned how, and they... Finally, the knight and the dragon were both ready, and they sent each other a letter and set a time for the fight. The fight. And here they are, the dragon and the knight. And they get closer, and they're running together. And oh, they passed right past each other, and they collapsed, and they didn't do a very good job of fighting. Charged. They missed. They fall. That's right. So they try again. And they charge, and he missed. He landed in a tree, and the dragon missed and landed in a pond. Poor fish, poor dragon, poor knight. Boy, lost his shoe. But who else is in this picture? I don't know. In the water. It's the librarian. Look at that. In the old, old, old days, the library books came on a cart, apparently. And the librarian... A woman, a very smart woman, says, obviously, oh, you guys need help. So she's giving them a book. And she gives to the dragon a book called The Outdoor Cookbook. And she gives to the knight a book called How to Build a Barbecue. And they read their books. And, because, you know, the knight had a lot of skills now with pouring metal, and the dragon had a lot of skills with fire, right? And what did they end up doing instead of fighting?
K&D
barbecue. Knight and dragon barbecue. So they took a different path that they found clearly more happy. Yeah. What did he make? What is it?
The librarian.
It's the is that the librarian? Oh, with a smart man next to her. Huh, who'd have thought? And that's the end. So that's that story. The library is a wonderful place. You can take different paths. You can change your course.
Yep. Tonight in the driving room.
And we're good.
Instead.
What's at the library today? Oh, why, Lily? What would you ask? It just happens to be a book sale at the public library today. Yeah. So you should go. 1 to 3. That wasn't really intended as a plug. Let's go.
Offertory will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. Okay. Thank you, Slavomir Dobrochansky, for the beautiful offertory music. We greatly appreciate it. A person is a puzzle. Sometimes from the inside, it feels like some pieces are missing. Perhaps one we love is no longer with us. Perhaps one talent we desire eludes us. Perhaps a moment that required grace found us clumsy. Sometimes from the inside, it feels like some pieces are missing. A person is a puzzle. We are puzzles, not only to ourselves, but to each other. A puzzle is a mystery to solve, and the mystery is that we are whole even with our missing pieces. Our missing pieces are empty spaces we might long to fill, empty spaces that make us who we are. The mystery is that we are only what we are, and what we are is enough. In the gray stillness of this morning, into the accepting peace of a still sky, let us offer our failings, our inadequacies into the silence, and let us know that we are accepted by this community exactly as we are, accepted, missing pieces and all. Today's personal journey program will be given by Jessica Sievers, Grace McMillan, and Chris Bailey.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Sievers, and my spiritual journey does not start in the church across the street from my childhood home. The only times I stepped foot inside that church was to take shelter in the basement during a tornado warning. I did go to various Christian church services with friends and extended family members from time to time. I considered myself lucky that I was not conditioned into believing ideas such as, I was born a sinner, I have to repent for my sins, there is only one God, and if I didn't choose the right God, I'm going to hell. I refuse to believe that an innocent child can be born into the wrong religion and not knowing any better is going to hell. Why can't the big religion question have multiple correct answers? I have a bachelor's of science degree in biology and nursing. I am a scientific person. I believe what science cannot explain, we just don't understand yet. Or you can chalk it up to a higher power or miracles and the such. In college, I spent so much energy trying to figure out what my religion was, what my beliefs were. I worried over ruling out everything it wasn't, rather than enjoying everything that it was and just letting it be. I'd like to share with you from the Tao. Can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep it to the original oneness? Can you let your body become supple as a newborn child's? Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? Can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing, acting with no expectations, leading and not trying to control. This is the supreme virtue. This Unitarian Fellowship, Joseph Campbell's PBS documentary, The Power of Myth, and Reading the Tao as translated by Stephen Mitchell, have had profound impacts on my religious belief system. My spiritual journeys began at a young age, boarding the school bus at 7 o'clock in the mornings. There is serenity in watching the sun rise in silent solitude as the sole passenger for several miles along the dusty country roads. In the movie American Beauty, Kevin Spacey plays the dad, Lester Burnham. He says, "There's so much beauty in the world. Sometimes I feel like I'm seeing it all at once, and it's too much. My heart fills up like a balloon that's about to burst. And then I remember to relax and stop trying to hold on to it. And then it flows through me like rain, and I can't feel anything but gratitude for every single moment of my stupid little life." And then there are moments in one's life that stop us in awe and strengthens our sense of spirituality. I've been told a story from when I was little of how I saved the neighbor girl's life. I don't remember this, but others never forget. Lily is 8 years older than me. She lived just down the street, but I was supposed to call first before going to visit. I'm a persistent little kid, and I let the phone ring and ring and ring. Her parents, eventually hearing the ringing, came inside from their yard work and answered the phone. "Can Lily play today?" I ask. She is nowhere to be found. The search for her ensues. She had fallen asleep in a large trunk, reading a book, and that airtight lid had trapped her inside. If I hadn't wanted to play that day, if I wasn't so persistent. November 8th, 1994. I have waited 8.5 years for this. I am becoming a big sister. My parents got special permission so that I may be allowed in the delivery room with a chaperone, my godmother. The crowning moment comes and she has arrived. I start to cry. The nurse sees. She comes to my rescue. "Oh, honey, it's okay. Don't cry." I said, "No. These are happy tears." If you want to become whole, let yourself be partial. If you want to become straight, let yourself be crooked. If you want to become full, let yourself be empty. If you want to be reborn, let yourself die. If you want to be given everything, give everything up. The Master, by residing in the Tao, sets an example for all beings. Because he doesn't display himself, people can see his light. Because he has nothing to prove, people can trust his words. Because he doesn't know who he is, people recognize themselves in him. Because he has no goal in mind, everything he does succeeds. December 2008. Picture a slice of cherry cheesecake. Like dessert, so delectable to the tongue, it seems like you're finished before you've begun. Dessert so sweetened that after you've eaten, it leaves you aching on the inside. You tell yourself, you shouldn't have gone so fast. A little piece of heaven won't last. But no, you forked it to death. You wanted too much too soon. The greed, or was it need for comfort like this? Bliss. The best choice at the time will cost more than a dime. However, I feel like a mime. My lips kiss the words burning in my mind, but blind is he because he stands behind this box that is not so transparent, that censors this word that can become offensive. A four-letter word, one that I've heard. From some, it sounds desperate. Others, distant, false, and empty. I've said it before, but next time I want to be sure, because it can evoke war. It can destroy the peace between us. Or it could form an everlasting relationship. There are moments when two flesh become one in physical, emotional, and spiritual climax. May 2013. Board exams. A minimum of 75 questions, a maximum of 265. This test will automatically end once it has determined with certainty you've either passed or failed. Game over. I have 6 hours. I tell myself I'll take a break after question number 75. Whew. Okay, go. I get to question 75, finally. I submit my answer. Uh-oh, nothing's happening. The screen went blank. What? Did the computer crash? No, wait, a new screen. The end. No! Expletive! I'm begging, pleading with the powers that be. Let me keep going! Well, that was a waste of a few $100s and that good-for-nothing prep course. There were a lot of questions I didn't know. Ugh, I failed tremendously. I call my mom. I cry. The worst 3 days of my life. I've accepted the fact I'd have to retake this damn test again in 2 months. The letter comes, I open it heavy-heartedly. What? I passed! And now I'd like to read a few more excerpts from the Tao. Obviously, I try to take its advice, but that doesn't always work. Act without doing. Work without effort. Think of the small as large and the few as many. Confront the difficult while it's still easy. Accomplish the great task by a series of small acts. What is rooted is easy to nourish. What is recent is easy to correct. What is brittle is easy to break. What is small is easy to scatter. Prevent trouble before it arises. Put things in order before they exist. The giant pine tree grows from a tiny sprout. The journey of 1,000 miles starts from beneath your feet. Rushing into action, you fail. Trying to grasp things, you lose them. Forcing a project to completion, you will ruin what is almost ripe. That's my journey, and I'm sticking to it. Thank you for walking along with me.
Good morning. For those that don't know, my name is Grace McMillan, and I always forget my name tag. My spiritual journey begins, like most others, with my parents. My mom was raised Catholic in Salina, but not for long. Her own mother, my grandmother, struggled with her Catholic faith and would often share stories of the shaming nuns in Kansas City who chastised the children in her Sunday school class, telling them that they were not fit to take communion if they had swallowed a single drop of water while brushing their teeth that morning. So my mother was not forced to attend services. My grandfather, in later life, converted to Judaism. So my mother's religious upbringing was already a little different. But these spiritual lives of my maternal grandparents were very private, and although born during the Depression, my grandmother was and is a very progressive liberal. Thank you for laying that groundwork, Grandma. My father was raised in Minneapolis, Kansas, by Methodists. His upbringing was more strict, and his experiences of religion were damaging. My parents met and became very good friends when my mother was a senior in high school. They started attending a spiritualist church in Wells, Kansas. This is outside of Bennington. And this would be the church where they raised their 4 children. Spiritualism is a small fringe sect of Christianity that believes in the continuation of life after death and communication with the so-called dead. You weren't expecting that, were you? Okay. We lived in Wells before I started kindergarten, so at that time we attended services regularly. These were lay-led. I don't remember there ever being a minister. Services consisted of some singing, opening the Bible and reading whatever page that was, and giving and receiving psychic messages. There wasn't a lot of talk about Jesus or even God, but a lot of focus on the Spirit. After we moved to Salina, and after that, we moved to Salina and mainly returned to Wells during the 2-week-long summer church camp. The camp was focused on meditation, past life regression, tarot readings, seances. I did not have a typical Kansas childhood. Instead of prayers before bed, my dad would do guided meditations to keep bad dreams away. As we grew older, we would have long discussions that dismantled traditional religion, especially Christianity. My dad would point out the conflicting creation stories, talk about how the pagan celebrations and deities were changed into Christian ones to make it easier to convert people. This is what we talked about at dinner. What I took away from all of these discussions was that religion was made by humans and changed by humans, and that my parents had experienced a lot of hypocrisy in the churches of their childhoods. This belief was so strong that when my older sister converted to Catholicism to marry her husband, my father wouldn't attend the wedding. At that time and for a long time after, I had a belief in God, just not the God in the Bible. The God that I believed in permeated everything. It was in you, it was in me, it was in this podium. Today, that I know that that would be considered pantheism, but I didn't have a name for it then. I was spiritual, but I was not religious. In college at KU, I finally met other people my age with similar beliefs and kind of similar backgrounds. I made friends with several pagans and found this belief system very compatible with my own. I was still fascinated by organized religion and religious beliefs, mainly because it was a really foreign concept to me. So I majored in anthropology and did a junior-senior concentration in religious studies. I met my first husband during what would have been my senior year, had I not dropped out. He was a PK. I'd never heard that term before. He was a preacher's kid and had two children. So there I was, 22 years old, suddenly raising Christian children in a Christian home, although they were very liberal Christians. This was the first time I grappled with my own religious identity. I was envious of how many of the big questions concerning the meaning of life and our place in it were readily answered through their belief system. I searched deeper into Christianity, but couldn't make that spiritual leap of faith required. Instead, like my grandfather, I started to research Judaism. Many of the religious traditions of this faith appealed to me. I started reading books like L'Chaim and Choosing a Jewish Life. I even called and spoke with the rabbi in Lawrence. So many parts of myself wanted to believe, to have these answers, but I couldn't. It did not work. Luckily, my crisis of non-faith ended after my divorce, and I made peace with myself as an apathetic agnostic. I didn't know if there was a God anymore, but I didn't really care. I found my search for a traditional religion was an exercise in navel-gazing. I was only concerned about where I fit in the world. What were these answers for me? When I stopped this focus, I began to do more work that was other-centered. I started volunteering. I became a big sister through Big Brothers and Big Sisters in Topeka. Later, I provided respite care for full-time caregivers through Midland Hospice. And during this time is when I met Colin, who I hit the lottery. He had a similar worldview concerning religion. No big deal. Just going to ask my mom where my sled is. I feel like I'm talking too fast because there's not a lot left to tell you guys, and I feel bad. We'll just have some time to talk after, I guess. So this is when I met Colin, and about a year into our relationship, we were having breakfast and coffee on a Saturday morning and reading the newspaper, because 8 years ago, people did that. And I read an article about the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Topeka. That day, they were having their Global Bazaar, and that's a handmade, fair trade holiday shop. It sounded really neat, so we decided to check it out. On an aside, that year, everyone in our family got animals, trees, or bees in their name through Heifer International. When we walked into UUFT, it was unlike any other church I had been to. I read a poster of the principles inside the door, then saw another poster with an upside-down pink triangle. What? This is a place where everyone was welcome. I even thought, maybe they'd take agnostics. I wouldn't have to discard any of my beliefs to attend services. I didn't have to adopt or pretend to believe in something I didn't either. I remembered thinking this was a place I could finally belong to completely. When we found out I was pregnant with Liam the following month, we started attending services. I finally recognized what I had been searching for. That was a surprise, I'm sorry. It wasn't answers to all of life's questions. It was community. My UU community in Topeka was vital to my success as a parent. Liam tagged along. He feels really at home in these places, obviously. Liam tagged along to all the committee meetings. I became committee chair. He was there. Eventually, I started working as the administrative assistant at the fellowship, and Liam had a little desk. We were there all the time, and I loved it. I loved making copies of all the religious education materials for the kids, and I would read everything and just get so excited about, wow, someday Liam's going to learn all this. I knew I was giving my children one of the things I had missed out on during my own childhood. It's hard to be the only kid who isn't a Christian in school, especially in Kansas. To not have a place beyond the walls of your home where you belong. Finding Unitarian Universalism has completely changed my life. Whereas before I considered myself spiritual and not religious, now I'm pretty religious, but not so spiritual. Through different classes at UUFT, I have accepted the idea that I identify most as an atheist. Our children are being raised in a non-theist home, but we are giving them a community and a peer group that can understand and respect their family's beliefs or lack of belief. I love that Unitarian Universalism is a service-oriented faith, that working for social justice is part of our identity. Belonging to this faith for the last 8 years has steered my life in a direction I may not have found on my own. This fall, I began graduate school in clinical social work. As I studied the history of this profession, it was like studying a who's who of early Unitarians and Universalists. The core values of social workers seem to have been written by UUs, or we had social workers help craft our principles. Today, I'm the most religious member of my family. Although my mother still attends our spiritualist church camp in the summer, and my sister sends her children to Catholic school, I am the one who is happiest when I can attend Sunday services. I know I'm a fairly recent transplant to this fellowship, and I'm grateful that my family has been so welcomed into your community. Thank you for being the most recent addition to my spiritual journey.
Good morning. I'm Chris Bailey, and I need to apologize in advance because I've had this clearing my throat thing going on for about 2 weeks now, so I'll try to keep that to a minimum. When I was asked to talk about my spiritual journey, I was sort of floored initially because, kind of like Grace, I think, do I have a spirit? Other than my own inner monologue, perhaps? I don't know. So to crib a Christian Christmas carol, this is called I Wonder As I Wander. Because if I have a spiritual journey, it's more of a wander than a journey. To be fair to those who've stood here before me and been honest and vulnerable before everybody else, I have to make that much clear. I have seldom, if ever, felt any inward compulsion that I could call spiritual, at least in the way that I've witnessed others who clearly do experience a spiritual life. That is, as defined apart from religion. I've never succeeded in succumbing to the ecstasy of spiritual fervor, at least I haven't outside of a reggae concert. So my experience with the overtly spiritual is limited to a colorfully varied religious set of institutions. I moved to Manhattan when I was 3 years old with my mom. That was when she married Alan Bailey. He worked for the university. And we attended the Manhattan Jewish congregation. And that was and remains a great group of people who I think have an awful lot in common with us here. Even though the services were on Fridays, they had Sunday school, which was fun, and it did everything Sunday school was supposed to do, which was inculcate the children into the community, both the Jewish community and Manhattan in general, and it served as a primer for the religious tenets, you know, but didn't beat the kids over the head with it. So in that context, I learned some serious Old Testament. It was fascinating. It was chaotic. It was what they were teaching was more history than in my mind or in my experience, than a religious or spiritual life. In the services themselves, there were a lot of moving parts. You could tell when people were really feeling it, because during the prayers and the songs, they would go like this. I remember feeling most moved in a way that could be called spiritual when I would see the older members of the congregation begin to weep. I was too young to be moved very much, but if I had been through what they had been through, I would have cried too. I was cognizant of that. And that was a very moving experience. And it happened on a fairly routine basis, and helped make me the person that I am. Starting in high school, for a variety of reasons, I went to the Catholic Cape and Mount Carmel High School in Wichita. It was operated jointly by the Sisters of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who have an educational mission, and Jesuit priests. Enough said. These were highly intelligent, very talented educators who did an excellent job. They knew better than to beat you over the head with the tenets of the faith, though they were incorporated in a way that made them easy to learn and easy to accept. This was a point at which I found it easy to accept the idea of an immortal soul, and that I was going to hell if I didn't live my life in the prescribed way. It was easy to believe because everybody else believed it. It was there. Thanks to centuries of Jesuit effort, it all made logical sense. It was a internally logical system. It answered a lot of questions. For me, it answered an awful lot of questions that I hadn't even realized I should be asking. So, you know, there was sort of a Taoist master kind of way of it there. But I never felt spiritually moved by anything there. I mean, I was moved by fear. And church was still a chore, you know. Going to religious services at that point had never been enjoyable or something to look forward to. It was something to be endured, because afterwards you'd get to hang out with your friends and, you know, eat tiny carrots. It was all about the coffee hour, so to speak. Not much has changed. But I began to get a glimmer of what could be on offer when, after college, I was working in Washington, D.C., and my local parish church was geriatric, to be kind. So I just asked another Jesuit who I happened to be working with at the time, where he thought I ought to go. And he said, oh, well, you need to go to St. Aloysius, which is in the heart of Washington, D.C., in the heart of an African-American community. It was a large church, and they knew how to do it right. They didn't just worship, they worshiped. There was dancing and singing and jumping up and down, and I felt some small spiritual movement in that community. They were particularly joyful in their worship, and I really liked it, but I was not long for Washington, D.C. I only lived there for 2 years. And I went back to law school, and I had plenty on my plate then, and I had a built-in community. Law school is an awful lot like high school when you get right down to it. We called it Green High because we were in Green Hall at KU. I was a-religious at that point. I did pray, believe me, there are no atheists in the foxholes. And when in law school, there are two ways you end up speaking in class. The first one is called Rolling Boulder, where the professor starts somewhere and he asks one or two questions a day, and you know when it's coming down to you. And the other way is Lightning Bolt, where you just don't know when you're going to get called on. But when you get called on, you know, you're there in front of, you know, 100 of your closest competitors, and you don't want to sound dumb. I did quite a bit of soul searching at that point, but it was more inward questioning of whether, you know, I was cut out for this line of work or not. The answer is yes. Up until this point, my appreciation of religion was more historical, traditional, enjoying the tradition, I mean, and intellectual. Became more acute when I moved back to Manhattan after law school and was induced to sing at the choir in the choir at St. Paul's Episcopal. Now, I appreciated the Catholic Church because I understood some of its history and depth, its ancient roots. The fact that it had survived as an institution was all the recommendation I needed to consider it to be a legitimate form of religious expression. The Episcopal Church did it one better. It had good music. I kind of got a charge out of its roots in good old King Hal's marital contretemps. There and at Catholic school, I learned my New Testament. And, you know, there's some logical consistency there also. I mean, when you have, you know, a couple thousand years or 500 years to work on it, you could turn the Wizard of Oz into your sacred text, or the Gone with the Wind, for that matter. You study it that deeply, you can find religion in anything. You know, this was the point at which I probably would have enjoyed the pre-Vatican II liturgy more than what I was getting. At this point, I was starting to not really believe quite so much. I hadn't believed in a visceral fashion to begin with. I was believing because people told me I needed to. I feared for my immortal soul because people told me that I needed to. And I was beginning professionally and in real life be the one who was telling people the way things were. And I started to notice that, you know, if people will believe me when I tell them the way things are, what are we all doing listening to these other people tell us the way things are? We've chosen this path that we're on, and if it doesn't feel like it fits, then it's because it doesn't. So the most spiritually moving part of religious expression for me at this point was in the music. And I was more interested and more moved by that than any other exercise involved in the faction or institution that claimed to give it meaning. But, you know, spiritually, that is some part of my inner self separate from an inner monologue. Frankly, I still just feel numb most of the time. And I envy people who are able to experience deep spiritual feeling, but never really having had it, I can't say that I actually miss it. So pity me if you want to. I could use all the help I can get. That's, I think, one reason why I feel so at home here, is there isn't an overarching dogma that you have to believe in order to be a member of this community. And I think it is by control of the community that religions have historically controlled the populace and exercised their very real agendas in society. And I don't want to say, thank God, you know, we're this postmodern society and we're done with that now, but I'm glad that we have an option these days that, frankly, you know, we've never had before. This is, an artifact of modernity that I'm really glad I live in this day and this age and not in some previous one. That being said, having come here and come to you, I do feel a great sense of belonging, as though it existed before I even came. But I'd rather not overthink that. Spiritually, this part of the journey will do just fine. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much, Jessica, Grace, and Chris. We appreciate it. Our closing hymn today is number 324, Where My Free Spirit Onward Leads. Please stand as you're able to. to laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and to endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to know that even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded. That was Ralph Waldo Emerson. Go in peace.